Welcome to room 223, where I hope I encourage everyone to think outside the box and stretch their minds. I'm Norville Crandall, and this is my first podcast. Episode 1, take 2. I'm not broadcasting from my room as hoped. I'm in my kitchen, so apologies in advance for any meowing cats, barking dogs, or squawking birds. I've been teaching high school business and college business classes for over 25 years. And my initial thought was, well, how hard can a podcast be? It shouldn't be any different than teaching my classes every day. Boy, was I wrong. First was, who was going to host the podcast? That was easy thanks to former student Hillary Michelle Post and her podcast, We Are the Weirdos, Mister. She uses Anchor, so I am as well. Then select music. What? This is a problem. I like virtually everything, from Pink Floyd and Moody Blues to Parachute and Tom McDonald. How am I supposed to select one that represents me? I think I'll have to use something different every episode. And finally, content. The content is the most important. And I've thought about this a lot. I want to connect with my audience, with my students. But how do I do that when there's no interaction? And better yet, how do I make this relevant but not boring? Oh, give me a classroom any day of the week. This past 40 plus days seems like week 100 of stay at home because of the coronavirus. I'm suffering a huge void in my life and routine because schools are closed. I miss my students, my coworkers, my routine. I know I'm not alone, but it doesn't make it any easier. I have so much time to think, and it's always dangerous when I have so much time to think. And I worry about what effects social distancing is having on my students and on their families, which only leads me to think about how this is impacting society as a whole and our economic system. The stock market is falling. Occasionally it closes on a positive note, but still ends the week in the red. Supply chains are crippled. Immigration is being temporarily halted. Unemployment has skyrocketed, passing the 20% mark with over 4 million claims filed each week. And let's not forget our food supply. Meatpacking plants are closing and dairy farmers are dumping their milk. Our government is suggesting that if states are not able to support themselves during this time, go bankrupt. What? How is this impacting areas that are already depressed? And more importantly, what does it mean for the average person? Let's take retirement funds as an example. I'm 6 years out, not quite panicking yet, but the stock and bond markets in distress, there are so many who can't wait for them to rally on their own. Additionally, if a state goes bankrupt because of going so far into debt, what does that do to our retirement funds? And how many of us will lose what we've saved, or will have to work even more years before we can enjoy our golden years? The short-term outlook is bleak, and the last thing we need is a run like we've seen in the past. So we have to use due diligence and know what's happening so we can adjust accordingly. Thankfully, the Federal Reserve is looking at using 5 key principles for economic policy. 1, do no harm. 2, put more, not fewer, resources in public health efforts. 3, assure businesses that things will be fine if the virus hits their sector, and remediate harm if necessary. 4, calm financial markets. And 5, ease the risks for households and vulnerable populations. The Center for American Progress explained the Fed's guiding principles in a detailed article dated March 6, 2020. If you want more information, go to the site. It was fantastic. But everyone agrees, this pandemic is the world's most pressing uncertainty. And what does this mean for me? For us? It means we need to remain calm and have faith that a financial rally will take place soon. that the Fed will keep interest rates low and that businesses will begin to function under a new normal, whatever that might look like. But you know, there's more to this. The assuring businesses that things will be fine if the virus hits their sector is problematic for the Fed. Smaller businesses are taking the brunt of the fallout. No revenues coming in, but expenses still need to be paid. They are going deeper in debt, both as a business and as individuals. You might have firsthand knowledge of this. The hairdressers, barbers, tattoo artists, servers, child and elder care providers, and nail technicians have all been impacted. I know there's more to this list, but it would take me 30 minutes to name just to name them all. They can no longer run their businesses for fear of contamination. Contamination to themselves or to someone else. Let's admit it. Even if we don't actively think about it, these are the businesses that support our way of life, and our way of life is rapidly changing. How many of us have been to the doctor or pharmacy and had our temperature taken before we even passed through the door? How many of us have stopped before entering a market because the maximum allowed with social distancing has been met? How many are taking advantage of no-contact purchases, curbside services, or going without just to be safe? It's an ever-changing world with a fluid landscape. How's your landscape changing? How are you changing? Another landscape that is quickly changing and taking a hit is the American supply chain. Many companies can't get materials to continue with a full workforce, adding to unemployment. Sometimes finding acceptable substitutes is impossible. Kind of like teaching. But timing and resources have become paramount concerns. And let's not forget the items we get from China. After all, China contributes over 16% to the worldwide GDP. With all the supply chain disruptions, U.S. manufacturers cannot finish their own production and cannot bring their products to consumers. Can you say reduced economic growth? During the 2002 SARS outbreak, the U.S. had a 0.07% decrease in GDP. Currently, with this pandemic, we are experiencing a 0.4% decrease. That's five times larger and over $76 trillion in lost economic activity. Globally, we are looking at a loss of 2.4% in overall economic growth. Preston Caldwell and Karen Anderson, CFA, feel, however, that since 70% of impacted businesses are exempt from GDP calculations, the current disruption shouldn't be long-lasting. See, there's hope. We will recover. This still leaves us with extremely high unemployment, which won't be impacted or reduced until the stay-at-home orders are lifted. And how much relief that will offer, only time will tell. Unemployment has taken a toll on every sector. And if you've ever been on unemployment, you know it's never enough to pay your bills. And even if the stimulus check isn't big enough, it's not big enough to keep some families afloat. Unemployed people struggle to pay rent, thus impacting their landlords. They struggle to feed their family. Basically, they're struggling to maintain any quality of life that they once knew. I'm thankful the U.S. has unemployment insurance, but it's not bottomless and it's not able to sustain its current traffic indefinitely. There are several bills in front of Congress to address this, but the federal and state governments can only do so much. And not everyone is suffering from unemployment woes. For some, they are essential, but their hours are cut to the point where they too are struggling to make ends meet. Not only are they going to work every day, but they're not getting a full shift in. They are also exposing themselves to possible contamination. I have nothing but respect for the thousands of essential employees that go to work every day. The warehouse workers, postal workers, delivery drivers, curbside service people, and most especially the doctors, nurses, nursing home employees, and other frontline workers. Too many of my friends and family, and I'm sure yours as well, no one's immune, are employed in these sectors and are able to share stories of coworkers getting sick and in some cases even dying. They then have the knowledge that they might be a carrier. They might infect someone. They may take it home to their family. And you know, that's an extra load that they really don't need to carry. They need a lot more than our thanks. On that depressing note, let me mention that service and manufacturing businesses are not the only ones suffering. Another major industry impacted is agriculture, especially the processing plants. Not everyone has the luxury of raising their own food, and they may instead rely on purchases from the grocery store. Now, in addition to empty toilet paper and sanitizer aisles, we are seeing empty meat shelves. Farmers are dumping milk because the bottling plant has closed. Farmers are unable to send their livestock to market because the processing plants are closed. Tyson Foods has closed at least 12 meatpacking plants and 3 processed food plants due to the coronavirus. One facility alone produces enough beef to feed 4 million people. 4 million from one facility. Farms were already facing a stark outlook, and now with the inability to sell their goods, it's looking even worse. COVID-19 knows no boundaries, and according to FERN, at least 2,460 food plant workers have contracted the disease, and at least 17 have died. Tyson is not the only one impacted. Pilgrim's Pride, Hormel, ConAgra Foods, and Bell & Evans have all felt the effects. Anyone who knows me knows I use Bell & Evans as my go-to business. I have a son employed there, so I can get firsthand information. And while they, Bell & Evans, haven't closed any of their plants, they are suffering higher than normal call-off rates due to the COVID-19. And even with higher standard safety protocols in place, it's not changing things. Most companies have suspended travel, increased sanitation, offer COVID-19 education, and encourage all employees to follow CDC recommendations both in and outside of work. Worker schedules are being staggered, face masks, shields, and gloves are required, and employee health screenings are performed at each shift. With these practices in place, production plants are trying to thwart food shortage and contamination issues and keep our food supply chain intact. At first glance, world economics appear rather bleak. There's no denying that we are all connected, locally, nationally, and globally. Meanwhile, time marches on. We listen to daily reports from our president and governor, although some of those may have stopped. We closely watch what happens as sectors reopen, and we wonder what the new normal will be. Some of us are envious as some states reopen beaches and businesses. My stepdaughter posted a video from a Texas beach showing it lined with vehicles safely distanced apart, and families staying away from each other as they try to enjoy the beach and surf. I'm not quite brave enough to do that yet, but I know someday I will be again. We're also listening as some people in power assure us that we won't lose too many to COVID-19 when we reopen. After all, losing 2% of the population is minimal. For me, personally, 2% is too many. That's 15 from my school building alone. Any loss is devastating, but a loss of that magnitude in a small community would be crippling. School districts don't have a clue yet what social distancing will look like when students are able to return. We suffer from a teacher shortage now. If our classes have to be smaller, where will we find additional good teachers to guide and mentor? How will our buildings grow to be able to accommodate the added smaller classes? And if we utilize a blended learning environment, what about those students who lack basic internet access or technology? How will we ever be able to provide an even learning field for all of our students? Beyond the immediate news, though, we are all wondering, what is the new normal going to look like? Hugs and handshakes will be a thing of the past. Face masks will be the new sexy. Make sure you get your coordinated ones and your new accessories. And what will sporting events and concerts look like? Will they come back to live performances in front of sold-out stadiums? Or will we all be watching with bated breaths from our homes? These are the thoughts that fill my mind with so much unscheduled time on my hand. I'm a traveler, a teacher, and a hugger. I have a family in 4 different states. I have places I haven't seen yet. I teach, I interact with students on a daily basis. I need them as much as they need me. And finally, I'm a hugger. I'm a human in need of hugs. So what's the new normal going to entail? And no matter how many times I ask myself or Google, I haven't gotten an answer yet. All of the support for this podcast can be found in the news. Make sure you look at multiple resources. Never be content with just one viewpoint. Share with me what your thoughts are, but remember, keep them appropriate. Signing off this first episode from Room 223 with my personal and all-time favorite saying, have a great week, everybody. Stay safe, healthy, and happy, and good luck in all of your endeavors, providing they are legal and moral. Until next time, and I hope I see you soon. It's